You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And welcome, 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 dear listeners. Yes, for a change, you hear my voice first. But nonetheless, welcoming you on this, this brand spanking new particular month. Well, technically it began yesterday, but we didn't properly, you know, sort of like, introduce it properly for that matter. But obviously, we will be joining a little bit later by my co-host Helmut, as we obviously have a look at the discussion based upon World Oceans Day. No, it's not. We're not doing the show in sort of like celebration of World Oceans Day. We're looking at what was said within World Oceans Day. And primarily, where, in Namibia's context, it's probably the smallest resource we have. Contextually, you know, if you go and measure the land mass versus the stretch of ocean that is our national waters plus special economic zone, it's probably smaller than the country. It's probably 50% of the country's surface area itself. Because remember, that stretch from the shore, from the beach, wherever you might be lounging about now, this could even be at Hendy's Bay or at Swakopmund, or probably combating the turbulent winds of Lüderitz. You know, I'm sorry for you buchters out there, you know. Sometimes I've heard the stories of you guys having to light a cigarette within the gale force pressure from the winds coming from the Atlantic Ocean. Well, primarily it's because you guys are so exposed to those winds coming in from the sea. There's really nothing if you artificially built something that technically breaks the wind, hence one of the reasons why specifically, I'm now slightly bragging about Windhoek, why Windhoek is such good, if I can call it sort of like wind breaking, you know, features. These include trees, tall buildings, tall structures, hilly or hill-based sort of like architecture and the likes. Windhoek is going to love it. But then the opposite of that scenario also happens in that Windhoek also channels a lot of winds through its particular built-up environment. Believe you me, there are certain streets when those cold fronts here from the Arctic hit us, then you walk into that one street somewhere, or you drive into that one street, and then the wind just does this with you, just shakes you up a little bit. But besides the dramatics, besides the theatrics, and besides the particular sort of like recollection of wind trauma, today's particular discussion obviously has us looking at a scenario where in a Namibian context, it is probably the least spoken about resource. In a Namibian context, it's probably the most underestimated resource that we are talking about. In a Namibian context, it is probably the most ignored resource that exists. And it is actually a resource that we have touched on a few times here, specifically on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station, where we were looking at scenarios primarily in terms of Namibia's marine spatial plan at one stage. Obviously, there was also the discussion primarily about the back in last month when I wrote the article about this particular World Oceans Day discussion. But the scenario that stems out from this particular engagement is one that actually puts a spotlight in terms of how we look at this resource. how we view this particular resource. Now, to give you a little bit of a spotlight of what the Ministry of Fisheries, Agriculture, Water and Land Reform did for the day, specifically back in last month, was that they had a presentation from Deb Marine, which is a subsidiary of NAMDEB. They also then had a presentation from the Namibian Nature Foundation, or Namibian Nature Foundation's people, that specific segment that looks at the conservation of the oceans and Namibia's particular role that Namibia plays. And then there was the presentation from the lady for the Fisheries Directorate in the ministry itself. Now remember, this obviously speaks towards the complete absorption of that directorate into the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, so that it now becomes this other big ministry known as the Ministry of Fisheries, Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. But I told you guys recently also what is my sort of like personal pain regarding the labeling discussions that have taken place and the mixing and matching, obviously, that President Nandi Ndaitwa, had, and obviously her advisors had gone on the exercise they've engaged upon in terms of merging all these particular ministries. Now, there are headaches that start to show. Yes, you might argue, you might state, Dwight, but it's a headache that you have. Sure. Definitely. It's a headache that I have because I look at simplicity. I look at whether the systems actually speak to each other. Now remember, I'm basing this particular opinion also on the report that the Auditor General's Office did, the compliance report based upon Ministry of Agriculture, the previous version of Ministry of Agriculture under the former Minister Kalish Letwine, about whether or not the ministry is actually doing its part in achieving certain particular SDGs that fall within its ambit, that fall within its mandate. And obviously the verdict that came out of that particular report was a report that said, no, this ministry is actually doing the opposite of what it was supposed, what its role should be in achieving Namibia's participation, Namibia's goals, Namibia's aims under the SDGs. So, fisheries and marine resources, the label that the former ministry had, is a label that primarily speaks towards identifying an environment. It's an environment. Marine resources, an environment. Fisheries are the organisms in that environment. Now, environment and forestry also speaks to an environment that Ministry of Environment and Forestry have. Now, why would you put the former Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources, that particular division, in or merge it into the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform? The reason why I show you the conundrum there as well is that specifically, agriculture's policies, laws, stem from Namibia's Environmental Act. Now, if you've never realized this, and if you've never listened to what Helmut and I do, we actually show you which ministries are lead ministries in major developmental discussions of Namibia's pathway. Why do I do this? Well, it was not the Minister of Agriculture under the former version of the Ministry of Agriculture. It wasn't Minister Schledwein that had to submit Namibia's nationally determined contributions at the UN level. It was Minister Shifeta that had to do that. It wasn't the Minister of Mines and Energy, the former version of the Ministry of Mines and Energy, that being Minister Alwendo, that had to submit Namibia's nationally determined contributions at the UN level. It was Minister Shifeta. Now, hey Helmut.
Hey man.
Stop fighting with the chair, bro.
Sorry, I was busy denying a pregnancy.
That lie will only work so far. That lie will only work so far.
Well, yeah. To be fair, you're giving
someone's teenage boy here ideas alive on air.
Okay, guys, take responsibility. Don't deny.
But you're doing the exact opposite of what you're saying. But yeah.
Yeah, forget the first part. So, good afternoon and I wish I could say, look, the line I've used for a very long time is good afternoon and welcome. Now I can't say that because, well.
You are welcoming.
I'm the one that has to be welcomed. So.
You are welcome. So, we are welcoming you, Amun.
Exactly. Yeah. So, World Oceans Day.
Yeah. So, just the particular sort of like logic, Amun, before we start off with the actual discussion and showing sometimes also the conundrum in terms of mandate and in terms of like administration of this resource. Now, we obviously understood when the Ministry of Fisheries existed by itself.
Yeah.
It's an environment with a resource by itself. Now.
Fisheries only, you know, like one primary focus.
Just, yeah. And marine resources. That was the other half of the label.
Yeah.
So marine resources tells you environment.
Yeah, but look, I'm saying, you know, just one primary focus because, well,
it's a different environment.
Thanks to the fish rot, we know what their primary focus was. Marine resources, they didn't focus much on that. The fish part, they heavily focused on.
Yes. Now, I'm also going to get to that particular thinking.
Yeah.
Because currently right now, now that that whole ministry is merged into agriculture, it now makes it look like it is an agricultural perspective that this whole environmental perspective has to take. Now, here's the conundrum. Here's the major conundrum.
Yeah.
Ministry of the former, that directorate, that section, which is now a directorate.
Yeah.
That directorate technically has to be with Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, because fisheries and marine resources speaks to a completely different environment from a land-based environment. And everything that Ministry of Agriculture is responsible for is primarily extraction. Rural development to an extent.
You know what? Now that you bring up now that you brought up that whole point of view that seems to point in the directions of what seems to be misplaced directorates.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's still the conundrum between mines and energy and trade, international relations, because they still have to figure out where, primarily, where consumer protection comes from.
You know what would be interesting and fun all at the same time?
Yeah.
Just taking, you know, just taking forestry, environment, tourism and agriculture.
Yeah.
Then you put them under one ministry. That'd be nice because you know
creating a new ministry.
You know, just you just take all these,
or playing Lego. Yeah, Frankenstein with two ministries.
I'm just playing Lego here. Look, because the thing is, they have a lot of overlapping, you know, they have a lot of overlapping, you know, more like technical roles, or more like, and also not just that.
Yeah.
Not just that. And that's not like the main interesting part that I find with the different directorates, you know, under different ministries.
Mm.
It's how their roles heavily impact other ministries and other other directories under different, you know, under different ministries. Like the Office of the Auditor General's report pointed out that, you know, the practice that's being, in terms of inorganic fertilizer that's being used by the Ministry of Agriculture is in a long run going to create a lot of problems that then the Ministry of Environment will have to solve.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it literally goes, it technically does not add much to the SDG environmental compliance of the country just because of what this one ministry does.
Yeah.
Or did.
Yeah.
Let's say past tense because the report assessed past tense.
Well, the report was.
But we also have to assume that technically it's happening as well.
Look, man, the report was, especially on the inorganic fertilizer part, was mostly in reference to basically farming, as in crop farming.
Yeah.
And, well,
and it's harmful activity.
Well, that means crop farming is still ongoing. We still have, we still have green schemes, at least I would like to believe. I don't want to imagine the brown
ones. No, we can just call Anna Kleta, you know, the mayor of
She's very good at that.
The mayor of Rundu.
Anna Kleta, that was Dwight.
I still want to know why people decided that Anna Kleta is the mayor of Rundu. I wonder how the actual mayor
Look, if I was there, I would just run for office.
If I was, I would have just go drop off my CV. Look here, this is me.
Yeah.
With a little photo, you know. So.
Okay, but this with a little photo, really?
Yeah. You know, that passport photo.
I had
to say little because I couldn't think of passport. You know, that passport photo situation.
Yeah.
This is me, you know.
Yeah, no. But the thing is, just looking at it from the whole world, you know, oceans, you know, world, is it World Oceans Day? That was on the 6th of, on the 6th of June.
Mm.
No, was that on the 26th when World Drugs Day also took place?
Don't preempt the discussion. We still have to do. Don't preempt the discussion.
Okay, look, not and preempt the discussion.
And 26 was just last week. No?
I'm just laughing at who came up with this World Drugs.
Well, it probably shows.
At least call it World Anti or more like a drug you or know, illicit, something awareness or
illicit narcotics.
Exactly.
But the word narcotic already implies that it's an illicit substance.
It's illicit. Yes, yeah. Well, narcotics, or at least it would have been.
But okay, if you said World Narcotics Day, it sounds like, oh, we're celebrating narcotics.
Hooray!
Yeah, if for everybody who's taken LSD, yay!
Hand it over. okay, look, that's how the whole World Drugs Day is coming up in my head. It's like, okay, you know, are we congratulating people for getting high or something?
Yeah.
But it turns out it's actually the opposite of that. No.
Yeah.
So let's get to the, let's just look at the World Oceans Day. One fun fact that I like about the oceans, and I find it, you know, I find it amazing that it was pointed out in the discussions of the audio that you just shared, that we know more, at least, you know, in comparison, we know more about, you know, about space than we do about
the ocean.
Yeah, about the ocean. And, that part is also somewhat debatable because the ocean, I mean, space is massive. It's so massive we don't even know how big it is.
But here's but the thing, it seems it's easier, Helmut, to shoot up a satellite
to
there.
Travel. Yeah, you're right.
Because there you are not dealing with pressure that's trying to turn you into a little, you know, 5 cent.
Yeah, like in every direction.
Yeah.
So hang on a second.
That's why it's a different environment
that is
entirely.
True.
Space because, is also a different environment.
Because once you overcome the gravity, then you don't have a lot of things to worry about. At least, you know, except as long as you have you are under pressurized, you know, environment, you're fine.
Yeah.
But
with life support.
With life support.
Conveniences, yeah.
But if you are 13 kilometers under the sea.
Then already you've probably turned into a little, you know, plate of tin with gooey parts in between.
Exactly. Yeah. And, well, we know what happened to those billionaires that went to visit the Titanic.
Last year.
A lot of people turned the
whole thing. I don't know why people were angry at the world for those guys turning themselves into sushi soup. Because it wasn't anyone else's idea. It was the travel company that sold them the idea. Said, hey, do you guys want to go for tours down to the ocean bottom to see the Titanic? Just because the Titanic lies how deep, Helmut? Please educate us.
Wait, isn't the Titanic about...
I think it's more than a kilometer that it lies.
It's more than five. It's about 6-7 there, if not about 10.
Yeah. Because...
It's really deep, and the pressure on those depths, you have to understand, not even military submarines go to that level. They also, you know, military, let me just say, submarines have, limited depth they're allowed to go.
Just almost 3 kilometers.
Almost 3 kilometers?
Yeah, 2.8.
Jeez!
Wait, no, that's miles. That's almost 4 kilometers, 3.8 kilometers.
3.8, what's that in miles?
2.4.
Oh, yeah. yeah, you're right. So, now, the thing is, submarines also have limited depth they're allowed to go.
Yeah.
And now, that means there are certain levels where, like, because, like, there's a part of the ocean they call, you know, the midnight zone, where light doesn't reach.
Oh, that even happens here with us.
That's where you find the giant squids.
No, that even happens here with us. There were the total... Energies, Venus
the, Project. Yeah, the 300 kilometer distance for oil and gas.
When I went to the environmental consultant that does the environmental consulting work for this oil exploration activity in that Venus block, they cited specifically that it's an area, it's an environment, it's an ecosystem that is devoid of sunlight. Let me say it again, Ahmed. Devoid of sunlight. But here's the thing. What do we keep hearing every time we hear about Sherbourne Robin Sherbourne highlighting the oil exploration. Mm-hmm. It's 3 kilometers to the surface, to the below the ocean.
Yeah.
To the surf, to the ocean floor.
Yeah, to the ocean floor, yeah.
And then to drill another 3 kilometers below.
To where the
toward the resources.
Where the crude oil is.
Yeah. So.
So it's a combined length of a distance for 6 kilometers.
Yes, and it is a high pressure zone. So when we, so when someone explains to you high pressure, you obviously have to look at the context it is. If you are in a sales office, you work in a sales team, that is high pressure psychologically and emotionally. But if you're looking at literally geography and physics, high pressure is literally like deep horizon.
Yeah.
Like that oil rig of the Gulf of Mexico.
Mexico, yeah.
That, have you heard the story of what happened to one of the crews, the crews in the underwater situation? How one of the accidents also happened is that a puncture this small, Helmut, literally led to the death of the entire team because the whole pressure got sucked. They all got sucked through that little hole.
Yeah, I think I saw that part.
And it's one of
because they have to go through a depressurization process after they come back from deep under the sea. You can't just come up the, in the same way that you do you do in a swimming pool, because the difference in pressure from a depth that are too deep in the ocean to the difference in air pressure between that between your container and atmospheric pressure is not a good idea for your lungs.
Mm. For your lungs, for your ears, for your brain, even for your eyes.
Wait, your brain?
Yeah. How much your brain is just one big squishy sponge? Specifically the soft parts of you, which is about 70% of you.
Yeah, that's the
thing. Or 75% of you.
Look, man.
Physics is an ugly game, guys. I'm sorry. But physics is a really ugly game, yeah. So, yeah, that's about 75% of the human body. Of any land-based organism, mostly mammal. That's the game. Now, one of the things, obviously, that the lady from the Fisheries Directorate, what was her name? Madame de Almeida, highlighted was that almost 90% of the oceans have not been mapped.
That's one thing that is it, anthropologist, yeah. Mm. That like to point out that there's, about 70 to 80%, if I'm not mistaken, of the Amazon jungle is unexplored.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means, not anthropology, archaeologists. Mm. So that means, for archaeologists, that's a lot of data that could point a lot about the, not just the history of South America, but the history of human species as a whole.
Mm. And of the Amazon forest itself.
Yeah.
But then there's also the other major thing. Remember one of the things that we constantly get told is that, we've got to also protect the trees.
Yeah.
But we don't realize that 70% of the Earth's oxygen technically also comes from the oceans.
Comes from the ocean, yeah.
Which also shows you primarily that there's a combination of misleading narratives.
So we have to protect the ocean more if you're looking at oxygen supply.
Basically. But this also means that you should not neglect the on land of the onshore activities, plants and ecosystems, because they're the ones at greater risk because of our activities.
Yeah.
Another dimension that also stems from this particular discussion, from the sort of like the definitions, the philosophical trend, what's that word I wanted to use now? Tangent that I went on. In terms of the ministries that we've got in Namibia and where they're actually supposed to be focusing on is, Helmut, when I asked you, and you already mentioned it, you barely gave the answer away basically at the start. If I asked you today, what comes to your mind when you think about the fishing sector? Or no, when you think about fish and Namibia, what comes to your mind besides fish rot? What comes to your mind about fish and Namibia, if you put just
to stop Israeling just, my points, man.
Well, I had to Israel it very quickly. Specifically just to nip it there in the bud so that it does not lead to anything fish rot related.
Yeah.
But if you think about fish and Namibia, minus any fish rod related thoughts, what comes to your mind?
Okay, the classification of the activity itself, forget the directory, you know, of the activity itself of fishing, is one that has been making my head spin ever since you pointed out that shouldn't fishing fall under the extractive? Because for a very long time, I've been classifying fishing under agriculture because, you know, you can farm with, you know, you can farm fish. You can domesticate fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have, I mean, you know, is it aquaculture? Now, we have a commercial break coming up. The real good chicken frozen mixed portions. Okay, Dorashike. Omaferava in way, Nesenda, Omirongo way, no way. Oitera inwe, your machine or clover. Full cream, ilo, low fat milk UHT process. Irima Manomoka pakete. Okay, Dora, Everonomina, Mano, Nesenda, Omirongo way, no way. Oshoyo, E kilogram madirina to do right brand macaroni. Omenashike, Edromirongo Amanana Mari, Nesenda, Omirongo way, no way. And that way, D. Potinashi Pongushu, Matuatanwa, July, Odura Oyotwe, Yangatashiapu, na ShopRite.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. So coming back, guys, and Helmut, just where you were about to end off on that particular point that you had there.
Yeah, like the direction, or more like the bracket in terms of directorates under the right ministry, if I can put it that way. Like if you can just shift one, you know, shift directorates and put it in what you'd think are the right ministries they should fall under.
Yeah.
I've always thought that fishing for me should be under agriculture, until you just you know, turned my whole world upside down when you pointed out that, you know, well, maybe we should put it in the, you know, that should fall under mines because it's obviously under what, extractive.
True.
And now,
but mines is not a lead ministry, for example, mm-hmm. like environment.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing that mines probably is not in charge of. Now, remember that policy we looked at, the one of tourism and mining mm-hmm. last year?
And the one that went well, if there is money involved.
I'm here to bring my very big, but my very small, but very big little brother, that's now mines and energy.
Yeah.
I'm here to bring them to technically promote them in my space. So, Minister of Environment, basically, as the word says, environment, speaks about basically the air and the soil.
Yeah.
But then you come across a little bit of a four-way stop between Minister of Environment, Minister of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, and then the fisheries function of the state.
Yeah.
For example, like with the freshwater rivers of Namibia, under whose mandate would that fall? Just as a conundrum, under whose mandate would that fall?
Agriculture.
Clearly, anyone would think agriculture.
Yeah.
Technically, not, Helmut. It's an environment.
I mean, isn't the entire... Okay, so unless are we looking at agriculture as a, you know, you know, as a practice, not the environment it requires?
But that's literally what the actions in play are showing us. The actions in play by the ministry officials, by the ministers of agriculture we've had up until current minister Samwani, is a discussion of how do we view as Namibia fisheries or any aquatic based ecosystems or environments? Do we view them as where we go get food, which is what agriculture's main mandate is?
Yeah.
Agriculture, water, land reform. So land reform is obviously limited to anything agricultural and communal land based. Water has to do obviously with the freshwater resources that NamWater has to administer, which are dams in many cases, and which are sometimes underground water resources.
Yeah.
I say sometimes.
Okay. Why sometimes?
Well, it's a little bit difficult to also see a clear particular pathway, Helmut, between when you and I looked at the Standing Committee on Natural Resources report based upon the Omaeke uranium exploration.
Yeah.
Where, and we also looked at it beforehand, where we realized that the Water Management Act of 2013 calls for applications for, that every time you as a farmer have to drill or to bore, to drill a borehole, you've got to apply for a license.
Yeah.
But the Ministry of Agriculture also goes and drills boreholes for communal, for communities living in communal land areas. Now, does that mean that same ministry has to apply for licenses from itself for its own activity, for its own intervention? Which makes it a little bit of a conundrum as well. A major conundrum.
Oh, yeah. So you're playing both player and referee.
It comes back to that Nigeria comment that you like highlighting.
Oh, yeah.
No, not the same, Nigeria, the NAMCOR one.
No, I like highlighting the Nigerian one, but they fixed that one.
Yeah.
The NAMCOR one was pointed out by the World Bank.
Yeah. So it's the World Bank's comment of NAMCOR.
Yeah.
So we sit with these particular sort of like, we don't know which side of the match, which player is supposed to be. You know, it's like, what's the guy's name last night when I tried watch, when I watched the highlights of England and DRC?
DRC, yeah.
What's the guy's name? Alan Wan-Bissaka, that plays for Man United. Then the other guy, Sadiki, who plays for Sunderland. Then there was another guy. Now, we all know that Masuaku technically came from France to West Ham. But there was like three or four DRC players there that play in England professional football at the highest level of the English domestic game. But three or four of them technically could have been playing for the England team. That day, yesterday. They technically could have been playing for England because they were born in England. You also sit with the conundrum when you look at this particular discussion, when we now look at this resource, this, this environment of oceans.
Yeah.
The next one I want to get into, Helmut, is remember when I asked you the question a little bit just before the ad break about when you think about fish and Namibia, what comes to your mind, in your mind's eye? You obviously going on the tangent in terms of the extractive, you know, the eating function.
Yeah, the classification in terms of
and also
ministry.
And also technically what we've been doing, meaning our actions as Namibians. I would tell you that my specific also similar or my explanation also falls in line with what you highlighted there, because the national narrative regarding the seas, the oceans, all our aquatic environments have been based upon food. It's just a resource where you go get food. You will catch it. You apply for a permit. You go harvest. You come back. Straightforward. Straightforward stuff. But then, Hamoud, if we elevate that discussion to the next level in terms of identifying a resource that technically, when I asked it at the World Oceans Day, in event, I asked it of, you know, in the Q&A session that was hosted by the last presenter, Madam, the Almeida of the Ministry of the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries. I think it's Agriculture, it's Ministry of, no, yeah, it's Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. I asked her, you know, would Namibia's marine spatial plan be updated in some sense and so on? And she highlighted, in the response that she gave there, that it is a question mark scenario because it's still hanging in the air because the merger of the two ministries basically took place last year, which is a year ago. And which also brings to the fore a bit of a sort of like a, another dilemma, not a conundrum, but a dilemma in terms of when you have a marine spatial plan, Helmut, which the UN wants you as an African country which has a shoreline to create. A marine spatial plan is similar to like the, what's that one that the Ministry of environment has. It's okay. A marine spatial plan is more like a outline. It's like a massive outline of all human-based activities, and then environmental protection, conservation activities, and then industrial activities. And that's what a marine spatial plan highlights to you specifically, which you would assume exists also for the land-based operations, like you've got your urban, rural, your urban and regional land act, or that act regarding that. You've got your agricultural acts, the one, the communal land one, the reform act, and then the overall agricultural activities. Then you've got your mines acts about minerals, whether above or below ground.
Belong to the Namibian people, constitution, blah, blah, blah.
And then a guy.
And someone gets a license.
And then, a farmer with a title deed says, hell no, it belongs to Dwight and only Dwight. Here's my title deed.
You know, one thing that's really, that you'll find very hilarious and a serious pain in the neck.
Mm.
When you do, when you do commercial law, you'll find that the word thing, just the word thing, has an entire chapter dedicated to it.
We missed that chapter, Hamoud, on the definition of thing. I think they condensed it for us.
A thing.
Oh no, there is. No, you're right.
Yeah.
No, I remember now, because in the contract of purchase and sale, you've got to define the item.
What are you selling?
What are you selling?
Yeah. Is it movable or immovable?
And you as the buyer, yeah. What are you buying?
Is it movable or immovable? Is it physical that you can touch it, or it's something that is intellectual property?
Oh no. But then comes those, Latin expressions, longa mora and brevi mora. Delivery by the long hand, delivery by the short hand. I thought, you know, these Romans, they wanted to be poetic for no reason.
Oh yeah, they really went poetic, especially.
Delivery by the long hand, you're like, now you sit there thinking, long hand? What does this guy mean? And then they explain it. Oh yeah. No, it's when I give Helmut a key to a house. You're like, what?
You could have just said that.
You could have. And then it divorces itself from symbolic delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Symbolic delivery, which is literally the key to the house.
Look, man, every time I read a bunch of this literature and find, an unnecessarily complicated sentence, and then I just look it up online or on some of the books that I have, and it's explained in simple English, I'm like, look, you could have just written this.
From the get-go.
That's where I decided on, I think that's what gave me the point of view that much of the subjects, especially in economics and law, they are intentionally made complicated because they are not supposed, they could have just written simple English.
Oh no, there are certain sentences, have you realized, with also some of our acts? It's the sentence flows in one direction and it does a little twist just because of it goes as is, it is. And then you go like, as is, it is. Is this correct English? Now you're fixating on the English. You're like, did these people smoke something? Was this guy probably, did his spell checker just stop there and he just flowed into the next sentence while writing the draft, the rest of the draft? Did someone proofread this guy's work? And then, yeah.
It's that and doctor's handwriting, also intentional.
Okay.
Yeah. That's, someone just wrote, just a line. That, how the heck is that paracetamol?
Please don't make things personal, Because in many cases, people put my handwriting also in there. Like the other day, a lady went like, yo, can you read that thing? I said, yes.
Oh, yeah, that.
Because it's my handwriting?
I can read my handwriting. My history teacher liked to say that my handwriting is like a chicken stepped in an ink pot, then it walked around on my book.
You know, when people show up with insults.
I know. It took me a very long time to realize that.
And then the worst part is that you have actually seen a meme of a chicken walking on someone's paper. And there is no structure to that walking of that chicken.
That's my handwriting.
Because the chicken walks like this.
Yeah.
Chicken doesn't walk in a straight line.
Nope.
So yeah. But yeah.
Look, but when it comes to the, you know, to the allocation of different directorates under different ministries, I think, I don't think it's that much of a big deal if you are doing, if you have, equal distribution of resources. Because one thing I've come to learn is that, a lot of ministries tend to have the same, parents kind of love where they gather all their kids and tell them, I love you all the same. But they keep favoring one of them. So the ministries are pretty much the same. You have ministry of this and this and that. But when you look at much of their activities every year, you see that they are putting somewhat a lot of emphasis under one, into one directorate. Commercial break.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
So we come back to listeners from the quick break right there. You are joining us here on The Home Run on your number one talk radio station on what is a superbly cold, for those of you that are cherishing the cold fronts. Yeah. In winter, in the Namibian winter context, apparently it was -2 this morning. Well,
in the northern hemisphere, is sweating buckets.
Yeah, they were not just sweating buckets, Helmut, they're busy dehydrating or evaporating.
You know,
apparently France and the UK was 44 degrees yesterday. No, Germany was 44 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, I just learned that there are two different types of heat. They say, humid heat, which I think they are going through in the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
Turns out that the humid heat is way worse than the dry heat.
Oh no, just go there to France, just go there to France's community there in Zambezi. You will experience it. Actually, you know it when you come from Tivundu. Yeah, but I forget how much you have already acclimatized to Vanduk.
Yeah, you're right.
So if you any time in the future go to Tivundu,
so humid heat is worse.
Yeah. You can even experience a worst scenario of it in close to the Victoria Falls in Zambia. Or if you go to South Africa, to the Eastern Cape from Port Elizabeth heading towards Durban, you will experience that specific
humid type of heat.
Humidity, tropical weather. Now, South Africa is an anomaly from the eastern province to KZN, because that is climatic weather. That is, not climatic, that is tropical weather. So far south. And have you ever felt moisture on your lungs?
That doesn't sound good. Especially a heated one, because I felt steam from a pot.
It's that feeling. But steam from a pot burns you.
Yeah.
Imagine a weight on your chest.
And
I'm not talking about witchcraft. I'm talking about you walking, your eyes are open, it's broad daylight, you trying to do the same basic activities that you do in your regular environment.
The air is too hot, so it has...
The air has so much vapor in it, vapor in it. The air has water vapor in it. And it's not swakop and walvis. The air has water vapor in it, and you feel it on your chest. But, apparently, people that live close to coastlines apparently feel happier. I don't know where they came up with such lies.
Happier.
Apparently they supposedly also live longer. I also don't know where they came up with such lies. But I know my brother told me that stuff since he moved to the coast, and I was like, "That's a good saying, toch."
Tomorrow is Friday.
Keep maintain the peace, Helmut. Tomorrow is Friday. That's all you have to tell yourself. Tomorrow is Friday. Maintain the peace.
Leave me, I've been practicing. Now, coming back to the fish. Okay, for one, it's a good thing we participated in this whole world, Oceans Day.
Yeah.
Now, because thanks to me being terrible, I know myself, I'm very terrible at deleting stuff. So I still have a bunch of documents in my phone. So that's why I always make sure to
My phone always gets filled up because of various ministerial WhatsApp groups that love sharing 20,000 photos of the same event. The president from the side, the president from the front, the president's entourage from the behind. Then it's the minister from the side, the minister from the front, the minister and the president standing together. I'm like, what are you guys
doing?
Just take one photo.
Yeah.
Are you on NSA
from the NSA?
Oh, okay.
On the fourth page of the 2025 trade statistics. Furthermore, the agriculture, forestry, and fishing sector ranked third, with a share contribution of 7.0% to the country's total export basket. That was 2025.
Mm.
Now 2024. Interesting. There was a little bit of an upgrade going on here. 2024, there was exported goods from this industry decreased by 693 million when compared to the previous month, but scratch that. Then it also starts with furthermore, the agriculture, forestry, and the fishing sector ranked the third, contributing 3.8% to the total export of goods. There's a 3.8% contribution 2025 for September and November. That was for 2024. September 2024 for a document. Now the other one is for November 2025, where you see there is the contribution from the fishing sector. Ranked with a share contribution of 7%. So this for me is drawing a picture that the reason why it's important for us to have to have an ocean discussion, especially in terms of maintaining its ecosystem, is how fragile ecosystems are, and anyone that is basically has a lot of, that's terrible at chilling, that more often they have a lot of time on their hands at home. I look up online a bunch of nonsense, just looking up stuff. And it turns out I'm not the only one that ask questions that can be classified by a lot of people as stupid questions. Like, what would happen if all the flies disappeared? Boy, did I run into scientific literature. I didn't expect that. I thought, I'm just making up stuff here. Then I ran into whole type of, they really do break it down in terms of, if you got rid of all the flies, and what they are looking at is, what do flies eat and what eats flies? Then you start from that part of the food chain.
Yeah.
Look at it as a way of dominoes that are aligned in a way that they lean on each other. So when you remove one of them, the whole thing goes down. So as much as flies are annoying, if you just came up with some kind of Thanos type of magic and got rid of all of them, that would cause an imbalance to entire. Somewhat most of them even unrelated, food chains, which will end up impacting our agriculture sector. And you know what that means? If the agriculture sector is impacted, you're talking about no food. That means chances of human beings starving because there are no flies are really high. So, when you look at it from perspective that looks very like mundane, from first instance, like that, then you begin to understand that we have a fishing industry that has a very good contribution, that is a very good contributor to our overall economy as a country, and every country basically with a shoreline can say that. Now the ocean is not just good because it maintains the marine life, like fish, that contributes to our economy. If you took the oceans out of the equation, that means there is no shipping. You know what that means? Mm. You will have to fly everything that you buy online. How much would you be buying it for? I don't think you'd be able to afford something that is flown in.
You can't.
It would be ridiculously expensive. So one thing that we just said, you know, I know that every time that we talk about, you know, the advantages of the ocean, apart from the swimming and all that, and some of the, you know, beautiful landscapes that are scattered across, especially the Indian Ocean, that's the only thing we look at. But I like to look at it from a, you know, from a shipping perspective. Shipping is the most affordable and major source of cargo transport. And if it wasn't for the oceans, it wouldn't exist. That means you would have to fly everything.
And the rivers.
And the rivers. That means you'd have to fly everything. And here's one thing I find fascinating about rivers. Most, if not all the rivers I know, flow from inland and pour into the ocean.
Yeah. Except for the Zambezi. You have to ask questions there. And for the Kavango. And also ask questions there, because it basically flows that way.
I know the Kavango sort of like the Kavango River sort of like disappears underground at the Kavango Delta starts in Botswana.
I think
I have a sneaky suspicion it feeds into the aquifer that Africa, that South Africa, Namibia, and Botswana shares. But that water has to go somewhere. There's definitely somewhere it's going. Now, the thing is, doesn't the Zambezi pour into the, into the Indian Ocean, the side of Mozambique and Tanzania?
Is it that long?
I think so.
You are right. The Kavango River flows technically into the delta in Botswana.
Yeah.
So that means the river's origins stem from somewhere.
It's somewhere from deep inside Angola.
From Angola, yeah. And then it technically feeds. That means it's an aquifer that flows from there, that flows out from somewhere into the delta. And then with the Zambezi, it just goes eastwards. So you are right. It still flows eastwards. But then the question is, Zambia and Tanzania don't border, so that means it still probably flows into DRC and probably from DRC then into Tanzania.
DRC is all the way. Are you talking about Mozambique?
Well, Mozambique borders onto Zimbabwe, Malawi,
because
Zambezi and
Burundi is flowing eastward.
Which is your left. No, your right.
You're right. Now, when it comes to where it originates, I think it's somewhere parts of Angola or DRC, one of these. That's where it comes from. Then it just forms a border between Namibia and Zambia. Then it moves all the way.
It flows eastwards. So it has to flow away from Zambia.
It's flowing away from Zambia.
So technically the origins would be somewhere... Zambia
and Angola or DRC.
Those guys. But before we continue, Hamut, we've got a caller coming through. Let's quickly get a caller's contribution. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my mentor. Who handed?
Khulumun Angel Bona, Vatsi Angel Bona.
Morokeni. Congo Makako, Morugan.
Angel Bona, how have you been?
Wow, we thank God, my brother. We have been surviving.
Yeah.
It's a jungle.
yeah. But especially with the cold, Angulbona,
Oh, man, this cold, isn't it? Ha, but you know, the medicine, if you become fatigued, then they will attack you again.
Yeah.
With some flu, some kind of uneasiness. So, Helmut, you know, is addicted to gym, to the gym.
You need properly.
What is it that you warn me? You warn me.
I probier.
Yeah. So now, when you look at those, those resources that you are talking about, where they end, where they meet, wherever they come from.
Yeah.
maybe they were created by God in terms of our issues of life.
Who, the rivers now? Angabona, we're still on the rivers.
No, I'm just saying because this time when you were talking about, you were actually talking good things about Mme Netumbo, the president.
Yeah.
And how she's concerned with some kind of integration of service. You know, maybe one company is speaking with a different language.
Mm.
The other one is speaking with Yoruba. This other one is like, you know, the only thing that for Babylon, where people with a lot of language and there were some confusion. Babylon Tower. So
why are you talking about Babylon Tower here? Yeah?
Well, because you're talking about, the president is talking about an integrated kind of management system or whatever system that you want to employ.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
To address these challenges.
Yeah.
Be it unemployment or poverty or whatever.
Yeah. Blocks. One of the biggest stumbling blocks, one of the biggest developmental issues in Namibia is that we don't bring out data and reports enough about key particular sectors and initiatives. Helmut, you and I didn't know much, and I think the average Namibian didn't know much about, for example, the Trust Me Bro scenario happening at the Directorate of Mines in the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy about gold mining in the country, where you just put up a phone and say, dude, what did you supposedly mine for the day? You know what? We just kicked a rock around that constitutes as mining.
We didn't do much today.
Yeah. You know, just write any number there.
Yeah.
So, okay, listen, we are obviously over-dramatizing the scenario.
We're making a lot of enemies.
But if you want to know where we got that particular scenario from, it's from the Auditor General's reports. Once again, you know, you gotta love the Auditor General's reports.
Oh, yeah. Whew.
You gotta love them. And, you know, when they specifically look at compliance measures in ministries, you realize, oh, okay, some ministries are really not towing the line of development. A key thing that stems out from this scenario that I highlighted now is we really need to know a lot about, for example, what's happening like in our marine space or in our marine landscape. Now, I just shared with Helmut, dear listeners, just so that you should, the guys know.
Dwight?
Huh?
Before you go anyway, any further.
Ah.
Repeat the point you just made. We just need to know about...
about what's happening in our marine landscape.
Uh-huh.
Both the freshwater and then the oceanic one. Even the underground water one.
Thank you for repeating that point. You know that report we talked about, was that the Office of the Auditor General or the Natural Resources Standing Committee report?
It was a Standing Committee report, I think, where they looked at the Fisheries Observer Agency.
Not the Fisheries Observer, that was a Fisheries Observer Fund, that was the Office of the Auditor General. There's one we were looking about, we were talking about, there's one that talks about how frequent are we at making sure that our shorelines are safe from, intruders, basically, including.
Wasn't that the same report, Amon?
Where
they discovered that the Coast Guard, aka the Navy, was.
The ship that was supposed to be used to patrol and make sure that our shorelines are safe from intruders, including, well, you know, those that just sneak in to catch fish
from Angola side.
We
see you, Angolans.
Has been.
It was for like a 10 months, or was it a 15 months?
Almost a year.
Yeah.
If not over a year.
Yeah, that they were.
They were under service.
In maintenance.
That means, they were under maintenance. That means not much, if any, activities in reference to patrolling and making sure that our shorelines are safe what's going on.
Yeah.
That points to the lack of infrastructure. Now, go back to your question.
So, okay. But the question was more on having data and information.
Yeah.
Okay, the patrolling, the safety, security component is obviously there.
No, we don't have the equipment to patrol. Now, that's just on the surface. But yeah, to gather information that's, for scientific and basically all the information that we need to understand about our seas, yeah, we have to go beyond just patrolling the surface.
Yeah.
We can patrol the surface, which requires, not a sophisticated equipment in comparison to the equipment that you need to find out what's going on deep under.
But here's the thing, Hamad.
There's
a major difference between Coast Guard and Navy.
The bottom line is, who's going to get the information? Where do we get the infrastructure?
But that's what's the thing, Hamad.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be that agency that is empowered by an act, that Fisheries Observer Agency, which for 10 years, hey, David. Say something, David. Say something. Say something.
Yes. How's it,
Goliath,
guys?
Goliath.
Yeah.
Goliath.
Well, you said David must say something. Just the first thing that.
Yeah, I was listening to the conversation when I was coming here.
Yeah.
Particularly looking at the issue of water, but looking at that context, especially connecting to what you are saying, is that the aspect of water governance should always be involved. And when you speak about water, when you speak about oceanic affairs, you speak about all the ministries. I hear what you are saying about the Ministry of
Should I ask you the same question?
Yeah.
Let's ask him the same question. Yeah. Okay, so for you, David.
Yeah.
When you look at, when you think about fish and Namibia, what firstly comes to your mind, and then where do you feel fisheries and marine resources should be? Should it be more in Ministry of Environment or more with where it currently is?
No, that is a very good question. Where I look at it is that it should be approached in a coordinated way. Because if you put it in agriculture...
Why are you so political?
it's not a political answer. No, it's not a political answer. Yeah. What I'm indicating is that just in general, ocean itself.
Yeah.
It's not only about fishing.
Yeah.
It's about
tourism.
It's mining. About the mining. You speak about trade.
Yeah.
You speak about governance.
Transport.
And all these things.
Yeah.
That's why I cannot say it should all be the work of the Ministry of Agriculture.
Mm.
It should not be the work of Ministry of Environment. It should be a coordinated approach. That's why in other countries, agencies are together. They work together.
Mm.
Unlike in Namibia, where we are trying to do it now.
We had an agency that forgot to report for 10 years, Helmut. For 10 years.
Which, forget, they were busy buying custom license plate Range Rovers. No one forgets to report for 10 years.
Yeah, but when you look at...
Where did you get the license plate?
But when you look at fish, especially when you look at for consumption,
yeah,
I think agriculture should come in, and also the Minister of Environment, those two. By the end of the day, you have everybody. Because the oceanic studies or the study of water governance, they don't only talk about ocean.
Yeah.
They also include the aspect of rivers.
Yeah, fresh water.
Yeah, fresh water. We talk about the same thing when Namibia, and people don't want to talk about this, Namibia and South Africa, they are not agreeing until now.
The Orange River Senku.
Yeah.
I still want to ask you, David.
Yeah.
You wrote most of that article,
right? Yeah, I did.
What was the verdict in that one? Who on Namibia's side is the party, the ministry, the department that said,
look,
we are not happy?
Look who responded. It's agriculture.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ministry of Agriculture is the one which has responded.
But wasn't it Ministry of Agriculture that sent people to Botswana about the same commission, the Orange River, the Orascom commission?
Yeah.
Remember those videos that I showed you? But we had there was a directorate there from, it's a directorate of water.
That's why.
It was a lady, the director, that was there.
I cannot remember correctly.
No. On the Botswana social media of that organization, that water organization.
Mm.
And then there was no animosity. The Namibians were standing with a smile. Yes. We are here together as SADC participants. Everybody in this together you know, Viva SADC, I almost said something else, Viva SADC situation. And then suddenly here in January, we pop up with the South Africans saying, no, the Namibians are unhappy. But the Namibians didn't bring out any communication.
Yeah, it's still an ongoing fight. If you can remember correctly, end of 2024,
yeah,
where you have a high-level delegation, where you almost have everybody coming from South Africa and also meeting with Namibian counterparts. That time was Pierre Moshalenga.
Are you talking about the thing at Walvis Bay?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about... Yeah, it was in Walvis Bay.
The thing that Helmut and I, we realized when we looked at the speeches...
Almost useless discussion ever.
Helmut, David, you should have seen that, those speeches, those documents.
No. You will not... And I think if you have a discussion where you have different head of security, you will not get it out to you. What you get in public are talking points. What you get in public are talking points. But there was a tough disagreement there. Already. If you have to look at it, just by the delegation, you cannot have a Minister of Justice, the Head of Intelligence, State Minister of Intelligence, Diplomacy, and all the top level guys. You must understand that it's only that it's at a diplomatic level, but we are not agreeing.
We're exchanging blows. Yeah.
It's only a civilized world.
But what we saw was
that is what you see.
But we saw on both sides that these guys came with. Because we couldn't understand, for example, Helmut and I, we couldn't understand why the intelligence guys were there.
Yeah. That's why water is very complicated. Even when Helmut was speaking about patrol, you don't have equipment. You may even not know how much our ocean hold.
Yeah.
You only speak about water, but you don't know what the guys in Dubai are eating coming from our ocean. There's a lot of things that we do not know.
Do you know what's the worst part?
Yeah.
Remember the other time we spoke about the oceans, where I told you a bluefin tuna.
Yeah.
Goes for $100,000 on the Tokyo fish market. David, $100,000 for fish the size of that walnut. The fish that size of that wall, the biggest bluefin.
I'm telling you.
$100,000 is 1.6 million Namibian dollars for a fish. One tuna fish. We eat that thing here through coming through from, what's that, Lucky Star and the other South African brands, the INJ, Hooters. Yeah, they come with you shredded tuna in brine water or shredded tuna in oil, vegetable oil. And we think it's just because the can is this small, the fish is probably a pilchard.
No.
Namibia has blue as tuna species, ne? Namibia has tuna species.
Jeez, and those things.
And
are
the
massive.
Only thing we are worried about is horse mackerel, hierfurons, in front of us because of fish rot and hake. And I was trying to avoid the fish rot references, but
you cannot speak about the fish without speaking about fish rot.
No, you can.
And it says a lot about water governance and resource governance. You can go on.
Okay.
You want to roast them?
No, not roast. I'll just say, read something and then I'll keep quiet.
Okay. Keep quiet, Evan.
The national territory of Namibia shall consist of the whole of the territory recognized by the international community through the organs of the United Nations as Namibia, including the enclave harbor and port of Walvis Bay, as well as the offshore islands of Namibia, and in the southern boundary shall extend to the middle of the Orange River.
That's where the problem comes, boss. That's why our border post, if you drive on the way to, that's why I need to tell you guys, save up $5,000, ne? And then buy yourself a return ticket to Cape Town and back, and then you see what happens on that border, that Noord-Oever and the South African one. Keep forgetting that one. You see what's happening there. The Namibian border post is in Namibia. The South Africans are technically, I think, they are on the, they're literally on, close to us.
Yeah.
But you drive across the bridge.
You cross the river before you get to the South African checkpoint.
But the Namibians technically are slightly further away from the bridge.
Further inland.
Yeah, we are further inland from the literal river. The river, what you call the thing's name?
The riverbank.
The riverbank itself. We are not on the riverbank.
So,
the border post is not on the riverbank.
So the location has something to do with the dispute of we don't know where the border
Because,
runs.
Yeah.
No, we don't know. We do know.
We do know. South Africa claims, it's in the middle.
Yeah. South Africa claims the whole riverbank situation. The southern bank and the northern bank. The Northern Bank is Muslim Namibia. But in international law, it's supposed to be, you draw a line, 50-50. You know, it's not that thing that Dwight did with the tomato with his little brother, where I cut it 40-60, you know. At least you guys don't
You'll make an excellent Minister of Fisheries.
No, well, you know, people are still carrying grudges about that tomato, 20 years later. But anyway, yeah. So that's where the dispute comes.
Yeah.
Because it's under international law, mm-hmm. it's supposed to be 50-50. Now, we have clear understanding with Angola, Zambia, Zimbabwe, even with Botswana on the rivers here to the north.
Yeah.
But when it comes to South Africa now claims the whole thing.
Yeah, because if you look at the article that I wrote, South Africa, Namibia, and its southern neighbors, 100 years of water disputes. There is one guy from University of Namibia who did a very interesting thesis. He did the law degree, but in doing that law degree, his main research was focusing on that. There are two
on the dispute.
Especially when it comes to borders in that river. Because like we have mentioned, South Africa is mentioning that their borders, they are at the edge of the river, this side of Namibia.
Yeah.
That is their argument. Now Namibia is saying no, international law is not saying like that.
Yeah.
That's why people are not agreeing. But on top of that, there is also another dispute that is of flowing of water from the upstream to the downstream.
Lesotho,
yeah, that is where the problem is. Them, they are saying, no, we are investing in our energy infrastructure. But you are investing in that energy infrastructure, but somebody has to agree because that water is not yours alone. Even if you are at an upper stream.
And the worst part, isn't it? From the time.
That's the Egypt-Ethiopia dispute.
Yeah. No, but it's worse than the Egypt-Ethiopia. Here's the thing, Hamid, that happens. Remember, because of the start of the year dispute thing.
Yeah.
The one particular article that I read up in terms of the history, because there's this document at on the Orascom. Okay, not on that. It's hosted on another website, on a SADC website, I think. Not on the Orascom website. Because I think the countries don't want to give this commission the actual money it needs to function properly, like website fully updated and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I found this document on a SADC website. And the document lays... No, it was an engineering website. This document lays out specifically the timeline of since 2004, when the countries all basically spoke about this commission's, putting it together, everybody sitting around the same table, is that in the pipeline, the idea has been also to channel water literally from the Senku to Botswana. Because now the new dispute is now that some of the water will be now channeled through here, through Gauteng, to Botswana, to supply Botswana with water. From the Senku.
Yeah. Mm.
Botswana doesn't have any claim to the Swain Senkumos. But Botswana's part of Orascom.
Mm.
Now, this is also the next level of the dispute, Mos.
Yeah, and the other aspect is the water is mainly coming from Lesotho.
Yeah.
Lesotho is rich with fresh water sources.
No, it's just been... No, it's rich because South Africa is paying it rental money.
Yeah, then Lesotho and South Africa agree, no, we are building this... water project.
So it's part of their bilateral agreement.
But we are just like the last
and Namibia and
we are waiting outside.
And Namibia and Botswana are literally the fans clapping.
Yeah.
We are supposed to clap.
Yeah, that's why
but we don't want to clap.
That's why the ministry that responded is agriculture that say, no, we are not going to give you a green light to extend that project. Now, remember that if Ministry of Agriculture said that, you also have a head of international relations already.
Yeah.
Then you have the guys from justice already there. Yeah. Then you have safety and security.
Yeah.
Then that is where the whole commotion come in.
Then there's environment.
Yeah. Then agriculture can also come in. Then understand that within the same flow of water, you also have the riverbed that is enriched with diamonds and all these things.
Yeah.
That's why even that diamonds can also come into the sector. But it's very complicated. But what I like about Namibia is that we respect our standing member so much. That's why even if we are not agreeing, you cannot really see it. Well, unless you read between the lines.
Well, we did have a fight, you know, that was Botswana. Remember about the islands?
We did have, and we did fight
with South Africa at one stage, you know.
Look, on the Botswana, actually, if you just go on the ICC website, you'll find something fascinating about that case.
Yeah.
Which one? About the Kasikili?
DRC recently filed another case with the ICC against Rwanda. And now DRC have been filing those things left, right, and center. They filed one and then they withdrew it and they refiled in 2022. It was dismissed in 2006.
Yeah.
Now, they recently filed another. So just one party that's pissed off, it goes straight to the ICC and file a case. Now, according to what you find on ICC website, Botswana and the Namibia representative came together, just went straight to the ICC and was like, you know what? We have a little bit of an issue here and we could really use your help. I'm like, hang on a second. We did this? Because look, other countries would just go straight to the ICC and say, you know what? That guy I don't want to talk to, the one I left home. I hate that guy. You know,
and then the court will ask
I had a dispute with him.
And then the court will ask you, so why must I listen to you?
Yeah, why must, no, we didn't do that. We just like, Botswana, you think this island is yours? Oh yeah, take your bags. Let's go to the Hague.
But you must also remember the character.
It was the most diplomatic ICC approach you'll ever
do. But that's what we had to do. It's all that we had left.
We just decided, you know what, we're going to do.
Because remember, a year after that, we literally went into what is known as Africa's own world war.
DRC.
Yeah.
I hear you. But you must also look at the character of political leadership that we had at that time. I was listening to, it's a documentary at that time of the late Theo Bengurilab.
Yeah.
Listening to that is that we just won Wavis Bay back.
Yeah, which was literally 94.
Yeah, which was 94.
Yeah.
But during that conversation, it was the former President Bumba and Theo Bengurilab that were heading those negotiations.
Mm.
And people had much trust in Theo Ben to say, no, diplomatically, we can still win.
Mm.
But in that video that was played is that there was a point that the Assembly Oma was very frustrated.
Mm.
To say, guys, why are you wasting time with this thing of sitting down if they don't want to, agree?
Mm.
We have weapons there in Ushimanda. we can just put Katusha there and we are done. because just to chase them away from Mavis Bay.
Yeah.
But they wanted that. But when you look at what happened to Kasikili, I think we were just defeated. We were defeated and we agreed to say, no, there we were defeated. We must move on with
even that process, where did it begin? 2008, when the UN people, that body that has to come and look at borders.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it 2008?
2008.
There about. Because it happened in the 2000s because there was a...
No, it was not 1999. The Kasikili thing.
Okay, not the fighting, but there was a measurement. We had to come together.
After all.
Yeah.
And then
the negotiation process started and then there was like an international observer process that came and said, listen, okay, we recognize these latitudes, these longitudes, these stars in the night sky at this particular point in time.
Mm.
This is where your border is. And this led to the recent dispute of COVID. Remember the Injindu brothers? Because the dispute that emanated also from there, if you listen to the family, was that they believe the guys were shot on Namibia's side.
Yeah.
But the Botswanans are saying, no, they were on this side.
You know, border-wise, I think we are squeezed. And I don't want us to go back to where we come from. But if you look at our map, Namibia is the only country in the world with a map with a straight line. And when you look at like somebody has used a ruler.
But it is, but it is what happened.
Used a ruler.
It is Mr. Berlin Conference.
But compared to other countries, you will not find something like that.
Mm.
Because geography is different, it varies in all these things. But Namibia is the only country that you find with a map that is too straight. And you're asking yourself to say, is this really a border, this one, or something?
And then you go think to yourself, is that how that fence runs? in a straight line.
Look, when it comes to the northern borders, especially the parts that includes the Kaprivi Strip, Talking about those borders.
It's not Caprivi.
Come again.
Zambezi.
Zambezi.
France might come beat you up.
Yeah, just that thump that we more often just just demonstrate with a thump when we are doing that Namibia map.
Why don't you just call it an appendix hanging there loosely?
I mean, it's a thump. It's part of Namibia. Look, the reason why it became such a complicated issue just for both, you know, for both Namibia, I mean, for Namibia, Botswana and the ICC was, how far back do you go in history when you're tracing this border?
Yeah.
Because all the historical borders can be traced to the colonial times. And the African Union have this, like continental level agreements that, you know what, we are not going to start shifting borders because, we'll just stick to the Berlin Conference borders.
Meaning,
just to let peace reign.
Meaning the Pan-Africanists are already losing on that front.
Yeah, they were just
because they don't know the chaos that they wish to create.
Because we already have enough chaos, border chaos right now. Not just borders, but whole territories.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have Somalia and Somaliland. We have, you have the Sahel, you have the, Western Sahara.
Yeah.
You have, Western Cape is, they are playing their own games here. So, not only do we have border issues, and every country has, every country has, has that. In fact, 90% of the wars that we fight are border wars.
Disputes, yeah.
Yeah. Russia and Ukraine right now. It's a border issue. And one thing that...
Every day, it's China and India.
Thank you. And those guys actually...
That's the funniest border war that you'll ever see.
In 2021, if there are two countries that I can thrust with nuclear weapons on this planet, it's China and India.
Do you know how that border dispute happens, David? Every day. Sunrise. Every day.
Look, in 2021...
No, I only saw a few clips where the military guys, they are negotiating... Just across the line, talking to each other.
Do you know what the Chinese do?
They went full kung fu in 2021.
The Chinese every day, the Chinese pick up the fence,
and
then try to move it like 100 meters every day. Then the Indians show up. It's like a whole squad, like 50 guys, with like these whips, sticks.
Yeah,
the sticks that you beat a person with.
Yeah,
and then they beat the Chinese soldiers back, and then they push the line back.
So they don't shoot each other.
No, it's a very diplomatic, environmentally friendly,
very
partially humane solution in terms of dealing with each other.
Yeah,
it happens every day.
One thing I have seen about Indians, they are very patient. No, they are very patient people.
Yeah.
When you look at the way they deal with issues, they are very patient people. But I think, it's very complicated, and the colonial master has done his job very well.
Yeah.
And to that extent that even if he's gone, we have to go back and ask him to say, Chief, what are you saying here? Where is the map here?
The Germans, earlier on, before the British, were given to the British as a protectorate. To South Africa was the protector.
Botswana. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. who occupied Botswana at the time? The British. When the Germans were here, the British were in Botswana. That part of the part of the Zambezi region today, that was a British part.
Mm.
Yeah. The Germans acquired it.
Yeah.
Now, every time that we have, every time that we have disputes, especially whether these disputes are associated to the borders or just the region as a whole, it always goes straight to that discussion.
Mm.
It always goes straight to the British were here, the Germans were here. Mm. First, the British had it, and therefore it's ours as Botswana. And then Namibians would argue that, when the when the Germans were here, they reached an agreement with the British to acquire this territory. So
every time we go back to that,
to that same spot. And the British are not in Botswana, the Germans are not here.
You're absolutely correct. Even in court arguments, even you look at Kaskiri, even you look at this Orange River, they always go back and reference what the colonial master has done.
Great.
And you're asking yourself a question to say, if that is really what happened, can that justify the way forward? If it was done with an intention of dividing you.
I want to throw in a curveball with the Orange River thing to also show literally why the border technically is on our side of the river.
Mm.
So, back on Monday when we had the Ulwazi show here for the first hour.
Yeah.
So I, in preparation, I just pulled out the, you know, the 2021 report, the Ancestral Land Commission report that President Geingob had commissioned.
Yeah.
I pulled out their report because I made sure to keep a copy of that report, because sometimes at one stage on the office of the Prime Minister's website, that report just vanished, you know. One day it's there, or the other day it's not there. So sometimes with government ministries, you, when you see a resource, you download it, you keep it.
Yeah.
So I downloaded that report, and then I also looked at, there was another report specifically about land, the NDB6 document itself, the full one.
You may also lose it.
Yeah. Oh, it changes sometimes the language. It sometimes changes. Because the original version that you would find, the one with the ISBN number, with the registration number, is different sometimes from the one that you find on the National Planning Commission website. So preparation there. And then I came across a section in the Ancestral Land Commission report, a report that looked at precedents, Helmut, which is also in your field specifically of like the legal perspective.
Yeah.
The Ancestral Land Commission cited the Richtersveld community, indigenous community. That community, because my dad is from the North Cape, or was, because he was now deceased. If you drive across the river, you get into the North Cape of that North Cape province of South Africa.
There's
a community there, the Richtersvelders. They have exclusive indigenous rights to all diamond mining.
Serious?
Yeah. Now, it's on their side of the river, the South African side.
Mm-hmm.
But the Richtersvelders are literally the territory that borders onto the river. Now, imagine to you specifically, and you can basically also fill in some gaps, why did that 2024 discussion with the South African counterparts in Walvis Bay basically technically lead to some sort of a stalemate? Because reports were supposed to be generated from that discussion.
Yeah.
For the eyes only of presidents. Because we don't know what those reports are. Now, the dimension that I want to bring in there is specifically that there's that South Africa is a country that is practicing indigenous mineral rights, which you have to ask yourself in the Namibian context, is Namibia practicing this side?
It's a good question.
Small-scale mining is a little bit problematic.
Not as a Zim Zim.
Because, because they don't classify it as indigenous mining in Namibia. We don't classify it. We just call them small-scale miners.
Small-scale miners.
You know, although we are calling South Africa our brother, there is a lot of difference between Namibia and South Africa. The way we operate, even in terms of governance of our natural resources, there is a lot of differences.
Family members know how to kick the heck out of each other all the time.
So. it's our brother, but there is a lot of differences. Especially the way they manage their natural resources. but looking at the aspect of the main conversation that you guys started with water, one must able to ask a question to say, are we in charge
of our marine
resources?
Yeah.
Do we know how to govern our marine resources?
Yeah.
Are the Namibian people really benefiting from the marine resources? Are we learning from other countries? Do we even know, you know, even this thing of,
David, I'm going to send you a report now, but you can read it later on.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the core issues that burns at me is I want to know how much of a resource is there. Like, you know, someone like a geologist can potentially tell you how much of gold is still in the ground.
Yeah.
Now, I want to know how many fish species breeds in Namibia's waters.
Yeah.
And what's the economic value so that you can, you know, properly manage it. And then we realized when Helmut and I did the Office of the Auditor General's report about the Observer Fisheries Observer Board, where specifically they forgot, I'm using the word they forgot, to report for 10 years. It's between 2010 and 2020, Helmut. Just look at that gap.
Yeah.
What happened in that 10 years? You can fill in the gaps also.
No, they stole money. Where you were coming from. You know what we need to strengthen, apart from...
I'm here to be politically incorrect.
Apart from fisheries observers,
just
inspecting of natural resources. It's the same thing with mining.
Yeah.
You have a lot of extraction company, even now, that are exploring, but people are already mining. It happened a lot of times.
Yep.
Because you don't have inspectors. Either they are not equipped, either they are not qualified. The same thing with fisheries.
Bribed, one of them.
You asked a very good question about how
much. It's the Directorate of Mines. Yeah. It was gold mining.
How much do we have?
Yeah.
Under our water. But yeah, we have to look into.
We don't know who's sketching. We don't know who is sketching the fish on this. You know, we don't. I mean, we don't know if there are ships illegally patrolling our oceans.
No, we do know.
Mm-hmm.
No, we do know.
Now we do, after the whole maintenance thing?
Yeah.
Now we do know.
We do know where they come from. They're usually Spain and Portuguese ships and Chinese.
And remember that these are the same guys that we are in business with. It's the same thing with mine. People don't know how to talk about this. Look, if you want to govern our natural resources, I don't want to be very controversial.
No, be. No. David, you're the right show, David. Be, you're our best friend, David. You know, from the day onwards, David, you're our best friend.
If you want to manage your natural resources very well,
yeah.
If I sell chicken to you, and later on I realize that some of my chicken are missing, I also have to question to say, are you only benefiting from the chicken that I'm selling to you legally, or you're also getting some of my chicken from the black market? In the same thing, if you are selling diamond to somebody, if you are selling uranium to somebody, then you realize that out of your stockpile, not all of them are going through the records. Yeah. Then you must talk to this person. In the same thing, you have somebody who was caught with cybersecurity crimes. The next thing you see, a person went to China. Can we speak about these things? At least to say, how can we manage our natural resources correctly?
Yeah.
So that we wouldn't suspect each other. Because the same country, even Spain is our good friend. They have a lot of vessels. They've been in business with Namibians. They are buying fish from us. They are also training our navy and our naval guys and all these things. But at the same time, they are also taking from us. And people don't speak about this thing.
Yeah.
I think it was in 2008 where the vessels were caught. It's only that I cannot remember correctly. But for you to manage your natural resources very well, know where the official business is happening, and also know the beneficial of the black market of your economy.
But that is most the point of Africa, Mos. We don't have the market here.
Mm.
The gold goes to the London stock, the London Metals Exchange, or it goes to the Shanghai Metals Exchange or the Hong Kong Metals Exchange.
Yeah.
So the buyer and the seller meet there to sell the same mineral to each other there.
Mm.
The buyer and the seller are not together. The buyer and the seller basically don't see, you know.
But the buyer does not ask questions.
but they already have a trade agreement with each other.
Yeah.
No, the trade agreement happens there in a boardroom on a Zoom meeting over there with each other.
Mm. You know what I want to say is that sometimes the buyer is also problematic. Was it in Mali where they realized that the gold that they are selling official is less than the gold that is being sold illegal? Then they realize that the buyer is making more money from this thing that is done under artisanal mining.
Yeah.
Then they realize that no, we need to regulate this. We need to calculate this because at the end of the day, the state is not making money.
Yeah.
People are going underground and they are buying it cheaply. I think it's just natural resource governance that we need to intensify, especially where we are now.
Do you believe that thing, or do we need the monitoring? Do you remember the audios that I sent you today? Did you listen to the guys from the civil society?
No, I did. Look, it's monitoring.
We need the monitoring evaluation, David.
I hear you.
Governance we can only happen if you have the data.
We needed that before. We are still needing it. From 2022.
Yeah.
You know, APRM is not the first time.
From 1990.
It's not the first time APRM is saying that. And I'm just asking myself, why do we keep on repeating what we want instead of taking that pill? Somebody said Namibia know the disease that they are sick of. Namibia know the medicine. They just don't want to spoon.
We have the spoon. We have the spoon.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We know where the medicine is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We are not taking it. We are just talking about our disease.
The doctor is broke. And he's making money through that.
and I think
guys,
I think
the three of us are a bad combination.
I think I also need to send you this report.
Yeah.
It's the same APRM, but at a continental level.
With the large one.
Yeah,
no, not the targeted one of Namibia.
The 2025, but they have a case study of Namibia, South Africa, Kenya, and Ghana.
Mm.
That is 2025 APRM report. They were looking at implementation of Agenda 2063.
Yeah.
But what they found out is what we already know.
Mm.
To say, you guys, your institutions are fragmented, they are not coordinated. Number two, you don't have...
Isn't that Auditor General's Office own report?
It's the same thing. Yeah. You do not have statistics. Monitoring and evaluation is weak and all these things. Now you're asking yourself to say, they said that already in 2022.
Yeah.
They said it, 2025. They are speaking about it with what
today
you said.
Again, with civil society people. Yeah.
Was it this week again?
Mm.
They were speaking about it, Namibia Statistic Agency.
Yeah. You were there yesterday, yeah.
No, NSA realized to say, no, guys, you guys are doing our job. We're supposed to coordinate, guys. We are not in order.
Okay. Look at it this way.
Yeah.
Look at it this way.
Yeah.
For anyone that's listening and including you two, just on your spare time, look up, just look at the anti-corruption representatives of SADC. They have annual meetings where they talk about how to combat corruption.
Mm.
And it's they more often have United Nations present in some presence of African Union, but I'm not sure about the African Union, but the UN guys are, almost, if not always there.
Yeah.
I read through 3-4 years of, four discussions. They hold once, I read one for this year. They had it about a week or two ago.
Yeah.
The one for 2023. They are repeating the exact same thing over and over. Corruption is, erodes trust with the public. Everyone knows that. Now, how do you combat this? We need to exchange information amongst each other. You're only figuring this out now. And the thing, you have been singing about this thing for every time you meet, you talk about that.
Mm.
Yeah. And, the 2023 one, when they met in Luanda, that one was just spot on. I mean, it's amazing because one thing, they came up with 5 or 6 objectives. And objective number 2 or 3 there, now all these objectives have sub-objectives under them. Number 2 or 3 there was pointing at something that is similar to open contracting.
Mm.
So it's basically make it more like a civil society type of use a civil society type of approach. Educate the people on how it works. So they know how it works. So the more the eyes they keep on the institution, the less someone is going to develop long glueish finger.
Yeah.
Now the thing is, that requires a lot of civic education.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you have a lot of people, and we went through this with the Afrobarometer report. One thing that indicates is that people under the age of 30, the majority of them don't like to participate in discussions like this. So you are looking at an uphill slope of trying to help people that do not want to acquire the knowledge that will require you to help them.
Yeah.
That's problem number one. Problem number two, this basic education, civic society approach to combating corruption, it requires a lot of information. It requires every ministry, SOE, basically publishing information of everything that's relevant to combating corruption through the NSA. And then made public to everyone. This was happening in the Ministry of Environment. Mm. This was happening in the Ministry of Agriculture.
Yeah.
This was happening in the Ministry of, Ministry of Education.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. There's just one problem. When we ask now, when we have two of our vessels that are supposed to be patrolling our seas in maintenance for over a year, how much information about our oceans is going to come out of that?
Zero.
No.
Or maybe 1 month.
Is it, look.
Because the engine still has to be warmed up. The diesel still has to be procured.
Mm.
The guys still have to come up back from their 10 months holiday leave because the boat was not working.
Uh-huh.
Look, I don't know what is the actual.
And it's Namibia. HR. Every Friday, the technician is drunk. Shout out to Namib Breweries.
Sometimes.
Valfus is not, you know,
I think, okay, now,
there's much going on in Valfus, you know, so look, the technician probably look, has nothing to do in Valfus.
The report that basically, brings a lot of pain in terms of reporting and regulation on, especially in the extractive sector, is the National Assembly Standing Committee report on the illegal, quote unquote, illegal lithium mining, that the Standing Committee has to go there and find out that it was a major miscommunication between the Minister of Mines representatives and the people on the ground, including the regional authorities. Mm. Now, what they found there was that the community members had a genuine concern. The previous operators did not decommission properly. They left a bunch of open pit mines, which was a hazard to both the people and their domestic animals. Mm. Now, so we have regulatory authorities that are supposed to make sure that those operators maintain, decommissioned properly in a way that they basically cover everything up. Now, if we cannot regulate and supervise a small-scale lithium mining operator, you can't convince me that we are going to handle multinational corporations that are doing mining on a large scale.
No.
We'll just show up there and say, "My bro, here, may you know, iPhone with two SIM cards, and I'm out of here."
My concern is oil, guys.
Yeah,
and that's the worst one because it's 300 kilometers offshore.
My concern is oil, and I'm even asking myself to say, which is why do we have Namibian even expert that? Okay,
no, we do have them. Don't worry.
But
just hold that thought, guys. We'll quickly take a short break.
All I'm saying is, get canoes, give it to Kavango's, problem solved.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25 Namibian. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99 Namibian. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99 Namibian. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99 Namibian. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99 Namibian. You Save. Where else?
So we come back, guys, from the quick break right there. Yes, this is the newly revamped-ish Home Run, where we do incorporate David from, you know, from 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we're going to need a lunch break.
Huh? You know, David parachutes here in with us. But yeah, David, Hamut, you guys were still going to make a point just before the break?
I'm done with my point. Minus the, you know, the
canoe comment.
The standing committee, Kavango, canoe comment.
Okay, no, yeah, Hamut, no,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, just the...
Leave the canoe. You know what, the name? Yeah. What I want to see in Namibia is people being held accountable. Issue of accountability. Because sometimes we may blame politicians, but you have implementers. You know.
Are you referencing Ambassador Kayama today?
No. I'm not talking on his behalf. I'm not saying they are entirely innocent.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that in some cases, you see that a person is not doing what was supposed to be done.
Yeah.
But you just call a person, you say, "No, Dwight, I think you are not doing what you're supposed to do." Then you go home.
Yeah.
You know what happened? I was very happy.
It does happen. He's right. He's right. Yeah.
I was very happy to see.
Okay, not with me, guys. I'm not talking about my own work ethic. Sorry.
Yeah, I was very happy to see anti-corruption reviewing a national strategy on corruption in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a national strategy, ne?
Yeah.
Then a consultant stood up and made a study. But when you are looking at those numbers, anti-corruption realized that he is in the relationship alone.
Mm.
Even if that strategy was supposed to be shared,
mm-hmm.
to say you, Ministry of Finance, mm-hmm. have a committee on ACC, you meet this time, you report this one. The consultant spoke and said, no, in some meetings, even director, they send PA or people that do not even know why they are coming to those meetings. Because that national strategy, apart from organizational strategy, that national strategy makes sure that within every region, every ministry, there must be a committee on that.
Yeah.
But headed by somebody with seniority.
Yeah.
Then they meet maybe quarterly and all these things. But the consultant say, no, even at this meeting, I just delegate you are my PA or you are the secretary. Then you do not even know what you are doing. People are asking questions. Then you realize that people are not doing their jobs. financial allocation was not allocated, then you realize to say, if this is already happening and we know who was not doing what, why can't we call these people to order? The same, just lastly, there was a time, is it a parliament?
No, but why do they have PAs? Let's ask that question. Why did they have PAs?
No, why do you delegate somebody who does not even know, just for you to be present?
Okay, let's start with, how did you hire someone who doesn't know?
Yeah, that's where we start also from.
Yeah, the other thing also that I want to end when you're asking that
that's
question.
That's probably why Helmut and I, we don't get into government.
No, we don't stay
there. You'll get there. You know, the other thing I wanted to indicate is also that on the issue of accountability, when you look at NASFA, for example, it's a very important and complicated institution. I don't know now, maybe it's a department to say that.
Yeah, now it's a department, yeah.
There was a time a parliamentary committee, was it on public enterprise? They called the whole management of NASFAF. But the numbers that were mentioned there, they were not numbering. But they said, no, guys, then the chairperson said, no, I know you guys are not answering questions that we are asking. Here there is no proper information, but thank you, go home. There is nothing to say. If you appear in front of me, and I'm asking you questions about the numbers,
you have to answer,
you have to answer the questions. Yeah. And the public is looking at, and the public expect to say, after you come in front of me, at least you must be held accountable. But you just come there and say, no, some documents are not there. No. Why there is 5 million here? This one is not being seen.
It's like Namfisa that was asked just now recently by the microlenders discussion. You know, do the laws actually protect Namibians? And then the one MP just asked a basic question about, Namfisa, do you have offices all across the country? Because Namfisa, in its testimony, said literally that most of the microlending fraud on everyday Namibians happens outside of Windhoek.
Yeah.
Which tells you, okay, so how do you know it happens outside of Windhoek? Oh, no, because we don't have offices there.
You know, there's a lot of things that need to be done, but one of the things is accountability. If we start holding each other accountable, then people will not do those things, because it's natural resources, it's national resources that you are dealing with. You can't be given a budget, then you spend it on entertainment. You can't be given a budget, you cut it or you send it back.
But
we just say, no, you did not do it. Next time, we must prioritize that. Now we are speaking about institutional coordination for the 5th year, maybe the 10th year.
Yeah.
We are speaking about, we are fragmented. We have been fragmented. It's not
since
a news to us.
It's been fragmented since 1990.
It's not a news to us. Yeah. If, I don't want to bring, somebody can do a study in Namibia, then a chairperson of APR APRM can stand, a national chairperson. I can predict that speech. I know there are some maybe
you are
new
bragging,
things,
David.
But I can predict it.
Any annual event, you can predict.
Except that Walvis Bay event between.
No, you can predict 80% of that speech.
Which one?
You and I didn't know that we were going to go through 4 pages of
all protocol
of all protocol observed.
Even the content itself.
We knew it was going to be slightly sensitive.
Yeah.
We just didn't know it would be 4 pages out of 6 pages of all protocol observed.
Like now, a few times that I've been in the media, looking at BON, for example, there's not a lot of things that are changing. Because if you compare, I'm not saying it's their job only, but when you look at the monetary policy, a governor can stand up. Maybe we'll miss the numbers, but you can predict the presentation too.
Yeah.
That is already telling you to say you may be developing at the pace of a snail.
Yeah.
Or you are not doing anything. Because things, they become so obvious to say, no, the problem with the higher unemployment, how can you conduct a study again to say you want to look at what our problems are?
No, but that's the exact thing. It's the thing that I kept telling Helmut about. One of the reasons why you can literally predict our governor of the Bank of Namibia's monetary policy speeches every time.
Yeah.
Is you just have to go look at the week before or the day before what South Africa did, what they announced, then you anticipate what happens here. Second scenario is you will always know Namibia cannot just print money. We can't do quantitative easing. We can't do what America, the US, America, the UK, the ECB of Europe, and Japan do. They can print money for quantitative easing, meaning they circulate more money into the economy.
Yeah.
But it's based upon demand of the money.
Yeah.
Now, who is in demand of Namibian dollars? for international trade?
It's a very good question.
No, it's not even a philosophical question. because there's only Namibians interested in Namibian dollar.
Yeah.
Now, stem also from the other talking point primarily about if we now look at, for example, like what happened with the Strait of Hormuz.
Mm.
You can immediately anticipate, okay, a month from now, we will have, Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy will have to react. He will have to make speeches.
Yeah.
Then the governor. Then it'll be Minister Shafuda.
Mm.
Then it'll be, what's the other minister that also has to intervene?
I think mostly it's finance and industry.
Yeah, it's mostly finance and industry. So, and international relations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because international relations now has just been everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday she was apparently at the US embassy. Yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, yesterday there was, was it a pre-independence?
Yeah, it's a pre 200, because to when? The 4th of July, it's most the Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Of the US's Independence Day, then they become 250 years.
That's the old.
Hey, if you look at Syria, that was the world's oldest country.
Are you kidding me? Syria, you say?
Syria was since the Bible times, since before Jesus.
Mm.
So yeah, Syria is most old Mesopotamia.
Yeah,
a part of Mesopotamia. Because Mesopotamia is Iraq.
It's a part of Iraq, Iran.
But Syria already existed because they were known as the Assyrians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Assyrian Empire.
No, the thing is that we know where our problem is.
Wait, where the heck were the Sumerians?
The Sumerians were, the Phoenicians and the Mesopotamians were there, there where Iraq, Iran is.
Because
the Persians already existed. Persians. So you had the Sumerians, the Phoenicians, because the Babylonians were a precursor civilization of someone else.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were the Mesopotamians or the Phoenicians. But if you go look up who has the oldest writing, whose writing is the oldest there, then they would say it's the Phoenicians. It's literally spelled like Phoenix, but Phoenicians.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to Mesopotamia, somewhere the Babylonians come in, and then the Sumerians, and then there's the Assyrians.
I think that is the area of France and Engel.
Yeah, no, you're about to say.
No, what I wanted to say is that, we know exactly where our problem is.
Yeah
we do.
Either it's water, either it's unemployment, either it's data, either it's coordination, either it's our economy. You know, I like reading Harambe, and I like comparing, policy document. It's a wonderful document.
Yeah.
Either is,
but
I'm not talking to you.
But NDB6, there's a lot of gaps in it.
Yeah. Either is a value addition. We'll be speaking about this.
Yeah.
Now we are in trouble. Then we are saying, no, we needed to add value. We already won before, Diamond.
Yeah.
That collapsed our economy before we were demoted from being upper middle income. Yeah. Economists were already talking 10 years ago to say, guys, you are in this class, but if you are not behaving, you are going back to where others are.
Yeah.
We know exactly, but let's wait to see what will happen this month, especially with ECB, because NAMPOWER has already submitted their backing tariff proposal. And NAMPOWER does not submit something to say we want to reduce the price. They don't do that. Let's see what will happen. Maybe National Energy Fund will assist us, since they, you know. But we even know where the problem of our electricity, what we need to do.
Yeah.
But we are still not doing it.
Yeah.
We know exactly that for us to be successful with oil and gas, we need a policy. But we are still in Parliament debating. Can we reject?
We don't need a policy.
We need improved.
I
wanted to speak about the Petroleum Act.
Yeah.
I wanted to speak about the Petroleum Act. We know exactly that is priority number one. We either reject it or we pass it with amendment. But now we are focusing on other things. But what if we are still debating, then this guy started shipping out oil? We are still discussing how to deal with it.
We are just discussing how to empower a person in the president's office.
Who should govern?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's, look.
Because by the time we are agreeing, people are already gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think we see, we know and we understand where the peer is coming from.
Our problem is too much English.
Don't sound like a boomer, please.
No, man, seriously.
Do you know what boomers say?
We meet every year.
Do you know that
whether it's on a continental SADC level, we meet every year and speak Oxford level English with next to zero implementation.
Because the boomers don't trust people that speak good English like you, that like the three of us.
Because they can easily negotiate for iPhone with two SIM cards. You need one with a broken English. Oh, we are 2 minutes to the hour.
Guys. Okay. On that particular note, guys. Thank you for joining us, David, on this inaugural 3-hour session. We'll see you again tomorrow. Don't run away.
No problem.
Yeah. Here on the home run, Helmut, for myself, guys, we'll see you, dear listeners, tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll obviously start from 4 and we'll end at 7. This has obviously been the Drive Time session brought to you by the three of us here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. On that note, stay tuned for the rest of the programming to follow on after the break. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Ipuranenge no wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nwe odete opoye ekukurile Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa
At my age you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before Like good health I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061.
In this case, because we have been also concerned with this uncoordinated activity. So there's no effective coordination if you look at some of the programmings that are going on there. And I think the president was just right to get it and say, you guys, why are you moving in a parallel way? And then in terms of housing, like all those social and economic issues. But I wanted to end with Helmut. On the, maybe on the bilateral agreement, the issues that we need, because those rivers, even if you need water, well, you know, the one who was talking about, hey, we have got the sun, the whole one day, the whole, the sun can supply electricity to the whole of Africa.
Yes, it can, Angabona. It actually can, but only during daytime hours.
No problem. So if you fill your solar panel and things like that and electrify some of those villages, you cluster them.
Yeah.
So are we working in the reverse form? I think that is my conclusion. I hope Helmut will tell us what is it. What about those some legal instrument that we perhaps those rivers, Kavango, all those rivers, are we not ascribed to them? How do we work together and make sure that in terms of the policies and laws, we can all get the benefits from those rivers?
But Angabona, before Helmut gets there, the question still is out there, Angabona, which you technically have not answered, is when you look at fishing or fish and Namibia, what comes to your mind, Angabona? How do you look at Namibia's oceans and Namibia's aquatic environments? Do you just see it similar to agriculture, a resource for food, or do you see potential past the food production element?
I think it passed, because if you look at the aquaculture and all those activities, you can also have some harvesting there or breeding of those things, and then you can also integrate it with maybe you want to have some poultry kind of farming or crop production.
Yeah.
And maybe what you need is now water or the resources. But many a times the resources, like aquaculture, I was looking at one point, this Benguela aquaculture, something of that nature.
Mm.
It was over here. So I think, I don't know, maybe so the fishing sector should be generating a lot of work. In fact, creating some job opportunity almost every time.
Mm.
And you guys who are getting concessions there and all those quotas and things like that, if you are forgetting about our villages, the conservancies, I many a times those community members are duped by the people who are putting their laws, especially in this side of Kavango, in the Zambezi, where you have a lot of
Don't worry, Angabona, we've got Anna Kleta there. She's the mayor of Eagle FM of Rundu. Of Kavango East.
Privately. Dr. Oshali Sinovari. What's in Dr. Oshali? What's that his name again?
Shaponale?
Shaponale. Big Mike talked much on those mining there that are there.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm sure that the indigenous people can also benefit. I don't know. Because sometimes I need to be directed by Elmut. my senior can.
You're sending those people to the wrong person.
Angabona, you're giving people jobs that they did not apply for.
We jump again tomorrow.
Okay, Angabona. Thanks for coming through.
Send them here for therapy.
Okay, Uncle Bona.
Your exercise is your therapy, my friend. Okay.
Okay, bro. So, yeah. No, guys, please don't come for therapy to the home run. Yes, come and listen to us. Don't come for therapy. We will send you back with scrambled eggs.
Oh, definitely.
That's what we will do.
Definitely.
You might be the scrambled egg. but there is actually some good points, obviously, that also came through from the caller's contribution, somewhat lending itself, Emma, to the discussion we had earlier in this week, the one based upon yesterday's one about the environmental litigation. When you obviously have to look at litigation and, you know, how the concerns of communities come about.
Mm-hmm.
But it still stems to the same question I asked. When we look at a resource in Namibia, do we just see the resource for what our eyes see, or do we see not just what is in front of our eyes, but also the potential past it? I ask that question, Helmut, because before the Ministry of Fisheries and Marine Resources was merged with Ministry of Agriculture, they had their marine spatial plan. Now, I heard of a marine spatial plan for the first time in 2023. Marine spatial plan lays out all activities. It's technically, think of it like an urban plan, Helmut, but for whatever activity you as a human is conducting there in the water spaces and in the marine, in the aquatic based environments of Namibia. So technically this would mean it's a ministry that is on par with the Ministry of Environment.
Yeah.
Now, if you had to merge two ministries together, would it not have made sense? This is now sort of like post-analysis or post-mortem analysis of
You'd
the merger.
You'd have another super ministry on your hands?
Basically, yes. But that is the idea, Helmut. That is the idea. In essence, if the fisheries part of Namibia had to be assigned to Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy or now where it is with Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, these two guys speak to protecting extractive sectors. Their mandate is extraction. So this particularly also means that we look at the marine environments and aquatic environments of Namibia for just pure extraction. We don't look at it in terms of saying, okay, let's try and enhance transport. Namibia's whole green hydrogen program, technically, Helmut, technically, is based off the European Future Fuels Transport initiatives. Remember that Future Fuels thing we did, that we looked at the International Maritime Organization's particular platform where the Greek guy went and said, hey, you can't talk here about biofuels. If no one is selling and making biofuels anymore,
Don't talk about biofuels. And then we're like, okay, sorry, delegate from Greece. We got you there. But in that scenario, even, where were the Africans even? Because I didn't see an African there. Not even the mighty South Africans were there.
This is where you start looking at, this way you start realizing that, when you ask the question from an African perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, you have a lot of landlocked countries but for the most part, a lot of African countries, those, you know, have a shoreline.
Yeah.
And that means the ocean then becomes a concern.
Yeah.
And that means, but being a landlocked country like you have Zambia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, that doesn't mean that they are free from concerns coming out of, you know, the use and access to the ocean, because for their import and exports. That's where bilateral agreements now become, comes in handy, because they need bilateral agreements with countries that have shorelines, so that they can, at least have some kind of agreement for them to export their products out of the country, because they have to export it out somehow.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that the fact that last year you saw, we saw Ethiopia almost went to blows with Somalia over Somaliland, because they wanted, Ethiopia wanted to make a friends out of Somaliland so they can give them access to the port, because they don't have, they don't have access to to the sea.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you how much trade is reliant on on sea travel.
Mm. Yeah, and then there was the Nile.
Yeah.
With Sudan and Egypt.
Shipping is very, very, very convenient when it comes to, a cargo transport.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I pointed at that is because once again, when we talk about how can we take advantage and preserve our aquatic ecosystem, and especially in reference to to sea type of aquatic ecosystem, we feel pathetic all over again, because there are a lot of activities going on. Like, you have deep sea mining.
Mm.
We don't do a lot of that.
Well, the first presentation you heard was done by Deborah's
people. Yeah, they're talking about rehabilitating. That's when, I never really connected rehabilitations in relations to the extractive industry on marine level. I always look at rehabilitation on extractive level. Onshore level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird, because the oil and gas is the Deloitte baseline survey on oil and gas has a rehabilitation and decommissioning way at the end of the process. So and that's offshore.
Mm.
So but I just didn't connect the dot. But the thing is, it wasn't until it wasn't until in that presentation where the gentleman was talking about rehabilitating the disturbed surface under seabed.
Yeah,
that's when I was like, oh, wherever you are conducting human activities, especially in relations to the extractive industry, you are causing damage to the surface of the environment.
Now,
so you have to figure out to fix things up somehow.
Now, which ministry? On shore, on land, is responsible for rehabilitation. To which ministry's mandate does rehabilitation speak to? Not in mines and energy, industries, mines and energy. It speaks to Ministry of Environment, because they've got the environmental commissioner.
Okay, so, but all they just have to do is supervise or regulate the rehabilitation. They don't have to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, this means the responsibility of the proponent, meaning for whom the activity is the best, biggest benefit for, meaning the private mining company or the partnership mining company that's conducting extraction. They're responsible for extracting, because they applied for extracting, but they're also responsible then for the decommissioning and the rehabilitation exercise.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, Helmut, that sounds very close to what the environmental commissioner
wants or expects of mining companies that come through the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy's particular framework to request for licensing, whether it be exploration and whether to have exclusive exploration rights on certain particular blocks,
yeah,
or to conduct then after said exploration activities, its extraction activity. All of this speaks literally to the Ministry of Environment and the Environmental Commissioner.
Dwight, this becomes painful when you link it to the quote-unquote alleged lithium mining that the Standing Committee of Natural Resources went to sort of like hear both sides of the story.
Which is the first thing I also thought about, because remember they went after that to the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy to go and interview them about the small-scale farmers and then talk about the supposed illegality of the UIS situation, the lithium situation. Just once again to pop up, they were basically supposed to talk to the environmental commissioner.
That is the second scary picture that lithium mining, illegal lithium mining, again in quotation, points out to me. What it points out is the concerns the residents of those areas had. One of the major concerns was of those unrehabilitated pits.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that was, those were not even large-scale commercial activities of mining that were taking place in that area. They were just small-scale mining activities.
Mm.
The question that pops in my head every time I connect these two stories is, if we cannot oversee and supervise the activities from mining all the way to decommissioning of a small-scale miner, I don't think we stand a chance with large-scale multinational corporations.
Indeed.
Commercial break.